Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of the city of London. We meet each Sunday morning for divine worship at 10:30 a.m., and we'd like to invite you to come and join us for a worship service if you live in our area. Or if you happen to live down in the Medway towns, we meet the first Sunday of each month at 3 o'clock at the Evangelical Free Church on Widmore Road in Raynham. Or if you live in Scotland, in the Glasgow area, I also serve as vacancy pastor for East Kilbride, St. Columba Lutheran Church, and they meet each Sunday morning at 11 a.m. I'd like to invite you to all of those places to come along, and I know you'll receive a warm welcome. But if you don't live in those areas, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the nearest congregation to where you live, go pay them a visit. I know that you will be blessed. I'd also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio, for without your prayers and without your generous contributions, we wouldn't be able to carry on our ministry of reaching around the world with the love of Jesus Christ so that all can hear what Christ has done for us. Today, we are very pleased to welcome Dr. Christoph Barnbrock. Dr. Barnbrock is professor of pastoral theology, and he's currently serving as the rector of the Free Evangelical Lutheran Church in Germany's seminary, their Hochschule in Oberursel, Germany. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Barnbrock today about a paper that he recently gave on the Lutheran identity in a post-Christian context. Sounds like great fun. Hello, Christoph, and welcome back to Lutheran Radio.
Thank you so much.
I love how you started out your paper by saying it kind of ironic that they asked someone from Germany to talk about a post-Christian context. Can you tell us what you meant by that?
If you think at first hand of Germany, you probably would think in a Christian context of the Lutheran Reformation, of everything which has been connected to the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation. And you wouldn't at once think about Germany as a post-Christian context, but actually it is, or at least it will be in the next 30 years, at least if you believe all the statistics and prognosis which are given.
So what do you mean by post-Christian? What could you define that for us?
Post-Christian wouldn't mean that there are no Christians anymore in this country. That would be a wrong picture of Germany. But the major change which occurs is obviously that Christianity is not the power in the society which dominates all areas of society as it has been at least 100 years ago.
You are, I suspect, talking about the close links between church and state and the influence that each had on each other?
Exactly, especially that. But not only the institutional connection between a church and state, but that you could say that in the 19th or even more in the 18th century, more or less, not absolutely, but the, I would guess 98% of the population of Germany has been Christian. So all the people in Germany have been deeply influenced by Christianity. And that has changed a lot in the last decades.
And you also talk about the rapid decline in church attendance, and that will also have its effect on people. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So church attendance is rather low. Obviously, it hasn't been as high as church has hoped for in the centuries ago, but it's really like that many people only attend worship services, if at all, for example, on Christmas, on Easter, but not on a regular basis.
So what is the sort of weekly average attendance at church? What sort of percentage of the population do you know goes to church in Germany?
Of the population is rather hard to say, but as far as I have it in mind, in the state churches in Germany, it's, I think, around 10%. And in the confessional Lutheran churches like the Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church, which I belong to, it is quite higher, about probably 25%. That's not much either, but it's a little bit higher, yeah.
And then you go on to present some sociological observations about the church. I wonder if we could, and how it relates to its context. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about those. And I found those to be very interesting. Especially your first one, acceleration.
Yeah, exactly. That's something I find really interesting because, somehow I'm convinced we have to connect to the world we live in with the proclamation of the gospel. We can't say, hey, we have our message and the people live their lives and there's nothing there's no bridge between those two worlds, but somehow we have to proclaim the gospel in the society we live in. So I really find it very interesting to have a look in sociological observations to see if there's something you can identify there which could be important for the question how to talk to other people about Jesus Christ. And there's one very interesting observation of a German sociologist called Hartmut Rosa, who is dealing with the question of acceleration. And he says that's kind of the main feature of our society, that everything becomes more and more accelerated and people have less and less time. And he also asks the question by himself, what does that mean for religion? And he says the faster a society becomes, the less there are spaces where religion has a room to develop.
And I really like the picture of, it's so true, the factories, they have to produce more each year. They have to become more efficient. And that just, that spills over into how our relationship with God and the church takes place on a daily level as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, the pressure and what has to be done becomes more and more year by year. And he says all the important experiences in life need time. Time for, how he calls it, resonance. That you have time, that something can happen with you. And that is not done if you say, hey, right now I'm religious, or right now I have 20 seconds for God. But usually you need to have more time to take time, as Jesus did actually when he went up to the mountains to talk to his Heavenly Father. He knew something about that it takes time to pray, and that's nothing what you can do just between two meetings with lots of stress, lots of hectic.
And I've noticed that about people who attend our worship services. One of the things they say they appreciate about them is we aren't in a hurry, that there are times of silence for prayer, and it gives them time actually just to sort of stop and slow down. I'm guessing you're saying that's really important.
Exactly. I think so. That's probably one of the things we need most in life in our Western societies, that we have those spaces and times where we don't have to act, where we don't have to hurry, where we don't have to do something, and that we are not asked if we do it really good, but that we can sit there in our worship services and hear the message. It's not about you, but it's all about God and what he does for you.
Okay, so the pace in society is picking up. Everything is moving faster and faster, accelerating down the motorway or the autobahn as quickly as it can, but it needs to go faster all the time. But then you talk about a second sociological impact, and that's patterns. And again, I thought that was very interesting. Can you talk about how patterns maybe fit in with this acceleration of our time?
Exactly. That is a different observation by another sociologist called Armin Nasehi, and he thinks about why the digitalization of our society has been so successful in such a short amount of time. And he says it is because it's the answer to a basic question of our societies, that that everything becomes so pluralistic that it's really hard to find orientation. So there are millions of products I might buy, but digitalization helps me, because with all the data I put into the systems, I get all those advertisements and stuff like that, which helps me to find the product which might fit to my person. And the interesting thing is, from a theological perspective, I think that he asks what the role of the human being is in this whole pattern. And he says it's really interesting that the machines and the computers become more and more intelligent, so that we talk about artificial intelligence. And he says, obviously, it's something which is special when we talk about human beings, that they actually are allowed to make mistakes, that they are permitted to make mistakes. And I really think that is an interesting thought, because it links us back to the story from Genesis, from the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve have at least the opportunity to fall into sin, and that has something to do with what mankind is all about, that we at least are able to disobey God. And we could think from there on about everything what is connected to sin and justification and this whole realm.
You talk about Adam and Eve and creators. I mean, God is the creator of all things. We are the creator of machines. And it's almost, I don't know, does he talk about us perhaps even taking on the role of God in the creation of these machines?
I mean, that's obviously what we do since man started to make simple machines or simple tools. I think everything of that has to do with cooperation with God's creation work. That's why Martin Luther is explaining what creation means. Not only that he says, hey, God has created the world long ago, but that Luther is referring to, for example, shoes, which are obviously made by men, by shoemakers. And so I think that is something which has always been like that. But with new technical possibilities, it becomes more and more obvious how responsible this work is.
And again, I think what you're talking about, we can all understand all these advertisements that keep coming our way once we order anything online. I was wondering if he had anything to say, though. I mean, he talks about giving us permission to make mistakes, but does he have anything to say about the fact that often we go online and just tell complete lies about ourselves? You know, we post false pictures of ourselves, or we say that we have jobs that we don't, or income that we don't, or cars that we don't. Does he talk anything at all about how we use the internet to try and create new identities for ourselves that are completely false?
No, actually, he's not addressing that question so much, but there are a lot of other people who are thinking about that question. I just read a book a couple of weeks ago where especially that problem is addressed, and especially the question if the internet and all the online media are really capable to connect us more as human beings. And it was interesting to read that probably also because of what you just said, because there are lots of lies out there that it's you can find evidence for the fact that people who are very much into the social media feel more and more lonely, even though they seem to have more connections online.
Yeah, we search for our meaning through these things and find there is no meaning there.
At least no sufficient meaning, yeah.
All right, so we've talked about acceleration. Everything's moving faster. We've talked about patterns, how we all like our patterns. We all, whether we like it or not, fall into a pattern. And then we talk, you talked about metamorphosis. What do you mean by metamorphosis?
Actually, this is a thought of a late German sociologist Ulrich Beck, who says that there's really a change which has become radical. He says metamorphosis is not only change, as things have always changed over the last centuries and millennia, but he says what we experience right now is not only a change, where things change bit by bit, but we experience changes which are so radical that they really bring new and unexpected questions with them. And one of the questions is all the questions connected to the possibilities we have if you have artificial insemination, that you get into questions, what is parenthood, and who is the father and the mother of a child? Is it a social thing? Is it a biological thing? That is not just a small change, but this is a change which, let us ask, absolutely new questions.
Yeah, and we are wrestling with those questions today, aren't we? You talk about parenthood. What is the family? What is human sexuality? What is a human being? All of those questions are being asked now that 10 years ago or 20 years ago weren't being asked.
Exactly. And I think lots of us feel the need to get into these issues first before we give very fast, very easy answers. So it's really kind of a lot of work to be done. Yeah.
You talk about two extremes one can fall off on. Can you tell us about those?
The one would be just to get back, just to say, hey, I don't want to deal with all those issues. It's nothing we have to address as Christians. And the other one would be, hey, that's how the world is developing, and that's just what we are agreeing to. And I think the way for us as Christians is to understand what's going on, to get involved in those discussions and to proclaim what we have to say as Christians into those debates.
So you're encouraging us to read the current literature, but also read even more carefully and more systematically the scriptures to be able to converse with people about these issues in a well-informed way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what the Christians always have done if they did their job in a good way. Not just to sit in their homes and say, hey, I don't want to know what's going on outside, but to get involved. And by being involved, being able to talk about Jesus Christ, to talk about the gospel, to talk about what we find in the scriptures.
Okay, so you've helped us to see kind of what's going on in culture, at least in big, broad brushstrokes, I think. We've got acceleration, we've got patterns, we've got metamorphosis. So how do we as Christians, give us some hints on how we can better relate the gospel to a culture that's in the midst of all of these fast-moving changes?
I mean, first of all, it's what you just said. I mean, we have a basis we are standing on, and that is the Holy Scripture, and we are guided by the Lutheran confessions as Lutheran Christians, and I think that is the main the main basis and the main fundament we need to stand on. It's nothing we can lose and we should move from. But if we want to be Christians, if we want to be Lutherans, that's the place we stand. So that is the first thing, always to get into that again and to read the scriptures and to get into it and to understand day by day more and more what God has to tell us. So that is, I think, the most important thing we should have in mind for our whole lives. And then I would say there's lots what we could and we should have in mind. One of the first things which is important for me is that we shouldn't think too much about being Christians just of one confessional branch of the whole church, but that we understand more and more what it means that we say we believe in one holy Christian church and that we are connected with other Christians of different times, but also different countries, and in a specific way also with Christians in different denominations, so that there's an ecumenical identity for us as Christians. That seems to be very important, especially in a time which seems to be more and more post-Christian, at least in the Western countries, and to know that there's more church than what we can see when we are on Sunday in the worship service and we have sometimes small groups who gather together there.
All right, Dr. Brombeck, you've talked to us about the post-Christian context, and you've just touched on a little bit there about identity, and that's sort of the second half of the paper, Lutheran identity. And I thought it was interesting how you described identity and talked about how that's just a fairly recent concept. Maybe if we switch gears and move into that direction, and what do you mean by identity? And then we'll talk specifically more about Lutheran identity in just a minute.
Yes, actually, identity, it's really something which arises mainly in the 19th century. So it's really a rather new question. Who am I? Who are we as a church? And that is linked to what we started with when we talked to each other, that in the 18th century, it was not really, there was no cause to talk about who we are as a church, because in a specific territory in Germany, more or less everybody belonged to one church. Perhaps there have been some groups which immigrated from a different country, but more or less it was pretty homogeneous setting. And the more things changed, the more the question arose, who we are as Christians, who we are as a specific church, and what is our identity. So that is really a question which marks actually a phenomenon of crisis.
Do you think that comes about because, is it the Enlightenment that brings that about, or rationalism, or why did that, or is it political events that brought that about?
Yeah, probably all of that together. So, I mean, Enlightenment and everything which is connected to that, liberalism of the 18th, 19th century, brought developments which made it possible that people, for example, could get into a distance to church or even leave church, which hasn't been a possibility in the centuries before. There was no chance to get out of church. It was not possible at all. And by all the developments starting with Enlightenment, every single person became more and more important. And with the development of democratization, the opinion of everybody became more and more important. And so different ideas of what church, of what Christendom, of what a single Christian is all about arose much more than the years before.
And was there a huge tie with nationalism? I mean, as I understand it, to say you're Norwegian or Finnish literally means also to say you're a Lutheran. I suspect it's not quite like that in Germany, but maybe not too far off.
I think that is part of the story as well, that we have this idea in the 19th century as well, that by the ideas of imperialism, the question of which concept of nationality is the most influential one has become a big idea in the 19th century, so that there was the question, how do we have to be very important, efficient, and powerful in relation to other concepts?
And you mentioned identity is often based on crisis. Could you maybe explain that a little more?
Sure. I think probably it's rather easy to explain that if you have a look on the biography of a normal human being. The psychologist Erik Erikson, he was describing the building of human identity by working on crisis situation in life, and probably the best known is the time when children become youngsters, so puberty. That may be very obvious that there is a challenge for everybody. You also can talk about crisis, where young people, which used to be children, need to find their way into adult life. And so finding their identity means to find their own way. And in a specific way, you could also compare that to what's happening in churches or different other groups. That also, if something changes in your world, you need to think about how you relate to those changes.
Dr. Barnbrock, we'd like to thank you for helping us to understand more about what it is we're living in, the world we're living in today, a post-Christian context, and how we as Lutherans are trying to find our identity or keep our identity in that world. I'd like to invite you back. Unfortunately, the clock has run out on us, and I'd like to invite you back next week, as well as our listeners, as we can carry on this conversation. So, again, we look forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.